This 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Islamic State claims twin Beirut suicide blasts. The blast killed at least 41 people and wounded more than 200 Thursday in Burj al Barajna, a busy commercial and residential neighborhood. It is controlled by Hezbollah, whose fighters back Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Police say there were two explosions minutes apart. The body of a third attacker, whose suicide belt did not detonate, was found in the rubble. Kurdish fighters, backed by U.S. airstrikes, have recaptured some areas around the northern Iraqi town of Sinjar from the Islamic State militant group in a new offensive launched on Thursday. Here's U.S. Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook.
This is another example of the pressure being applied to ISIL across multiple fronts. The Peshmerga forces, with the support of the Coalition Air Campaign and coalition advisors, are attempting to sever ISIL's primary line of communication between Raqqa and Mosul.
Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook said it is a specific effort to target a major supply route and, if successful, will have a significant impact on Islamic State operations in that part of northern Iraq. The European Union approved a $2 billion fund for Africa. The money will go towards combating poverty, which is contributing to the current wave of migration into Europe. The EU says the fund is to promote economic and equal opportunity, security, and development. The Peace and Security Council of the African Union plans to meet today to review the latest reports on the situation in Burundi, following concerns the escalating violence could plunge the country into chaos. The turmoil in the Central African country has forced about 210,000 refugees to flee to neighboring countries, including Rwanda, Tanzania, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is VOA News. President Barack Obama lifted U.S. sanctions on Liberia Thursday. White House spokesman Ned Price cited what he calls Liberia's tremendous progress since emerging from civil war in 2003. Former President George W. Bush imposed sanctions on Liberia in 2004, at the time saying a peace deal and ceasefire ending the civil war was not being fully implemented. The sanctions at that time targeted former top Liberian government officials and the family and close allies of former President Charles Taylor. Secretary of State John Kerry says the U.S.-led coalition will be doing more in the coming weeks to degrade the Islamic State's ability to produce and sell oil and gas, which helps fund the terrorist group's military operations. He commented at a Washington forum Thursday, ahead of a three-nation tour that includes talks in Vienna on Syria's political future.
If neither the dictator nor the terrorists are the answer, and they are not, our challenge is to create conditions under which a clear and broadly acceptable alternative can emerge.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter fired his top military aide Thursday after he learned about allegations of misconduct against Lieutenant General Ron Lewis. There's no information on what General Lewis is accused of doing. He is a three-star general who served three tours of duty as a commander and attack helicopter pilot in Iraq and Afghanistan. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro addressed a special session of the UN Human Rights Council to the outrage of international activists who had urged UN ambassadors to boycott the event. Lisa Schlein has more.
President Maduro arrived surrounded by a large delegation and was welcomed by a group of enthusiastic supporters. Speaking through an interpreter, he thanked the 43-member UN Council for re-electing Venezuela to another three-year term on the body.
This is a vote of confidence. It's a universal vote of confidence of the international community, the Committee of Nations, which has expressed its desire beyond manipulative and lie-based campaigns.
Human rights activists disagreed, accusing Maduro of brutalizing dissidents and student protesters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Kremlin confirmed that two of Russia's main television channels broadcast details of a planned new nuclear torpedo, apparently accidentally, and said it hopes it will not happen again. The planned weapon system is believed to be able to create extensive zones of radioactive contamination in enemy coastal areas, making them unsuitable for military, economic, or other activity for a long time. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Friday, November 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union Peace and Security Council meets today on the crisis in Burundi.
But our call still remains that there is still a window of chance for Burundi to make peace, to come around the table and build peace for the people of Burundi because, you know, we are now at the precipice of a crisis if that is not well managed.
Erastus Muecha is the deputy chairman of the African Union Commission. The African Standby Force is to be operational by early 2016. Europe pledges nearly $2 billion towards the root causes of Africa migration, and Liberia welcomes the lifting of U.S. sanctions.
By these developments, everyone should be able to grow in confidence that Liberia is a place open and ready for development, and we are a shining example of what a country which was considered a failed state can achieve.
Louis Brown is Liberia's Minister of Information. South Sudan's president is to host IGA Heads of State Summit next week. And maternal deaths have fallen by 44% since 1990. Those stories plus Mark Oman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union's Peace and Security Council meets today, Friday, to review the latest reports on the crisis in Burundi. The turmoil in the Central African country has forced about 210,000 people to flee to neighboring countries. Both the African Union and the United Nations have warned that if the crisis is not resolved, the security situation in Burundi could destabilize the country and affect the entire region. Erastus Muecha, deputy chairman of the African Union Commission, tells reporters Peter Clarty that the Peace and Security Council meeting will review the reports and come up with recommendations that would determine the AU's decision about the next step forward.
Yes, there is a planned meeting of the Peace and Security Council, and it is a regular meeting that will be receiving reports on the situation in Burundi. And of course, one then looks forward to the decision on how to move forward. Of course, the Peace and Security Council of the African Union has remained seized with the worrying situation in Burundi and has already made a number of recommendations, has been working with the region, has also, you know, made available offers on how to assist Burundi. So the African Union is, I would call it, on standby to see how they can help the situation in Burundi.
Well, Honorable Muecha, some people are calling for the African Union to impose sanctions on what they describe as the belligerent officials in Burundi, talking about both the government and the opposition groups, to pressure them to come up with a solution to the crisis, looking at the fact that thousands of Burundians' life is at stake here due to their ongoing security concerns. What do you say to that?
Yes, there has been some concern that some belligerents are issuing inflammatory statements and are not willing to come to the table. And unfortunately, this is the case of both sides, the government and those in opposition. But our call still remains that there is still a window of chance for Burundi to make peace, to come around the table and build peace for the people of Burundi because, you know, we are now at the precipice of a crisis if that is not well managed.
Opposition groups are calling for international intervention, and they said the African Union should lead the effort since the UN security is pondering about taking the next steps of possibly having the presence of MONUSCO forces or the UN forces in Burundi. What do you think of such requests from some groups in Burundi?
The African Union is ready to support, but as you know, there is also a regional effort led by Uganda, and we know that the international community is also very eager and ready to support the peace talks in Burundi. So we, of course, don't throw out from the table any options that could secure peace for Burundi. But I think the primary thing is for the Burundi themselves to take this matter very seriously and, you know, genuinely come to the table with clean hands and find a solution for the country.
Erastus Muecha is the deputy chairman of the African Union Commission. He spoke with reporter Peter Clarty from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. The 25,000-strong African standby force is on schedule to become operational by early 2016. The ASF is designed to be a rapid reaction force that will reduce dependence on international troops and shorten the reaction time to African crises. However, and as viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg, that may be easier said than done.
Why does Africa need a standby army that can parachute into hotspots at a moment's notice? For South African Navy Captain Jaco Tinnison, the answer can be boiled down to just a few words. The Central African Republic, Mali.
Yes, the DRC, Sudan. Yes, it's specifically because of those interventions. All of them are United Nations interventions, except for the one in South Sudan, which is a hybrid between the AU and the UN. And the feeling is that Africa should form their own African force, and instead of getting the United Nations to come and do peace support operations.
The 5 Brigade African Standby Force, under the auspices of the African Union, aims to do just that. Tinnison is a military spokesman for the unit's most recent exercise, called Amani Africa 2. The war game scenario recently ended in South Africa. As countries like France grow more reticent about direct intervention in Africa, analysts say the continent needs its own force at the ready. But no one disputes this endeavor faces a major challenge, one that has dogged regional military interventions in Africa for years. Tinnison again.
It's money. It's always money. It's a very expensive, costly, and technical operation. So the big challenge will always remain money. But just looking at this exercise, because it was as a real-life scenario as possible, it would indicate that it is possible. The strategic projection that was done by African Union countries themselves, and the whole exercise proved that it can be done.
Yaki Sillier, who leads the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria, says the ASF faces another challenge, in that troops deployed to a particular country may not be perceived as neutral.
Regional countries, let's say in the case of Somalia, Ethiopia and Kenya, have a real interest and a political will to intervene. And Africa does not have the funding, the ability to be able to deploy out-of-area missions. In other words, deploy troops from, let's say, Rwanda into West Africa. So what inevitably happens is that the peacekeepers come from the immediate region. Not ideal with all kinds of problems, but it is better than having nobody there.
South Africa is among the 11 African countries contributing troops, money, and advisors to the force. Another 10 African countries have pledged to join in. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
At a summit in Malta, attended by European and African leaders, the European Union agreed on a nearly $2 billion aid package aimed at tackling the root causes of migration. Hundreds of thousands of people have crossed the Mediterranean this year, overwhelming many European states' ability to cope with the influx. Henry Richwell reports from London.
On the dockside in Malta's port of Valletta last April, lines of black hearses took the bodies of migrants one by one to the local morgue. Only a few dozen of the estimated 800 people who drowned that day off the Libyan coast were brought ashore. The rest have never been found. That tragedy led to this week's summit in Malta, where European leaders were joined by 13 African heads of state. The European Union agreed on a $1.9 billion fund aimed at addressing what it called the root causes of migration. The money is aimed at creating jobs, improving healthcare, and conflict prevention. The plan received a mixed response from many African leaders, including Niger President Mahamadou Issoufou.
On ne sait pas suffisant. 1,8 milliard d'euros, c'est loin d'être suffisant.
Issoufou said $1.9 billion is not enough. It is far from being enough. The needs are enormous. That is why the EU are calling on other partners to participate in the setting up of trust funds. The Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi dismissed criticism of the EU deal. Renzi said these are judgments coming from those who always see the glass half empty. He says he sees a glass that is much more than half full because, first, Italy is not alone anymore in dealing with the refugees issue, and secondly, Africa is a priority. But the figures suggest Africa is not the number one priority, says Marta Foresti of the Overseas Development Institute.
€3 billion were pledged to Turkey to help support the response to the current crisis in Syria. So from that perspective, just by way of comparison, 1.8 billion euros for the whole of the African continent is probably not enough.
European leaders presented a 17-page action plan to tackle the crisis. In addition to the fund, Europe will attempt to sign individual migration agreements with African countries in return for development aid. The number of people crossing the Mediterranean from Africa is small compared to the arrival of over 650,000, mostly Syrians, who came through Turkey and Greece. Most are trying to reach northern Europe. Sweden, long seen as the beacon of support for migrant rights on the continent, became the latest member of Europe's passport-free Schengen zone to reintroduce temporary border checks Thursday. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, November 13th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Radio Banga, FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia. The government of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia has welcomed the lifting of U.S. sanctions which were imposed on the country in 2004 by then-President George W. Bush. In a letter to the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives and the President of the U.S. Senate, President Barack Obama said Liberia has made advances to promote democracy and the orderly development of its political, administrative, and economic institutions. Mr. Obama cited Liberia's two consecutive democratic elections, the conviction of former President Charles Taylor, and what he called the diminished ability of those connected to Mr. Taylor to undermine Liberia's progress, as well as the lifting of United Nations assets freeze on Liberia. Information Minister Louise Brown says the lifting of the sanctions should inspire confidence that Liberia is a country open and ready for development.
The statement from the White House testifies to not just the strengthening of relations between our two countries and between our governments, but also as to Liberia's, to borrow from the press release, Liberia's tremendous progress. Since the end of our conflict, we've worked as a government and as a people to deepen our democracy, to rebuild our institutions, to get our economy back on track. And so we're pleased by this development, especially in the light that it takes into account the enormous progress that this country has made.
One of the reasons cited was that what it called the diminished ability of those connected to the former Liberian President Charles Taylor to undermine Liberia's progress. Is your government confident now that security-wise that you're on the path to freeing yourself from this fear?
Indeed, we are. We are building and continuing to build the proper institutions that will lend support to these thoughts. At the same time, we are continuing to open up the society to lean on the goodness of democracy and the promises it provides. We continue to give our people freedom. We continue to protect rights. We continue to establish a deepened sense of the rule of law and justice. And we believe that ultimately this makes the society better, makes the society stronger. I shouldn't remind you that our sense of freedom is best tested by the wave of press freedom, the freedom of speech and of worship that people enjoy in the country. And so we believe that the work that this government and all of our people have put together has enabled our society to not just be better, but to be stronger. And so we're pleased by these developments because by these developments, everyone should be able to grow in confidence that Liberia is a place open and ready for development. And we are a shining example of what a country which was considered a failed state can achieve by a united people under a decisive leadership dedicated to strengthening the tenets of democracy.
Yet, Mr. Minister, a statement by the spokesperson for the National Security Council says that much remains to be done in Liberia, especially as your country looks ahead to the other major milestones, including the transfer of security responsibility from the United Nations mission in Liberia next year, July 2016, and the upcoming presidential election in 2017. Is Liberia ready to transfer security responsibilities to Liberians?
Each day we take a step toward being ready. Each day we take a step toward achieving those milestones, and that is all that anyone can ask for.
Mr. Minister, it's always kind to talk with you, and thank you for talking with us on Daybreak Africa.
It's really my pleasure. Thank you so much, James, and all adherents are celebrating these successes as they happen. Thank you.
Louise Brown, Liberia's Minister of Information, you were speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. South Sudan's government says it will host a summit of the regional bloc IGA next week in Juba, aimed at boosting efforts towards the implementation of the recently signed peace agreement. At the same time, the South Sudan government is asking IGA chief and Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn to postpone the arrival date of the rebel advance team in Juba. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Government spokesman Michael Makwe told the reporters in Juba it will be a one-day summit.
It's heads of states and government of IGAD and the IGAD Plus. All these will come and hold their summit here, and then they inaugurate the office of GEMEC here, after which the mediators will be here with them, and that will mark the end of the work of the mediators, and now the process will be taken over by the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission.
Presidential spokesman Atene Wake Atene says the purpose of the summit is to expedite the implementation of the peace agreement signed by the leaders of the government and armed opposition in August.
The Prime Minister of Ethiopia will be accompanied by the opposition leader, Dr. Riek Machar, who is the head of the rebel movement. He's going to also come to Juba to participate in that summit.
Makwe, who also serves as the National Information and Broadcasting Minister, says arrangements for the summit are progressing well, but since the government is busy with the summit preparations, it wants the SPLM-IO advance team's arrival to be postponed. Makwe says the 500-member advance delegation from the Amti opposition group was supposed to arrive on Monday.
We have not yet completed the preparatory work or the reception. So we inform them that the most appropriate time will be on the 26th, so that when they come here, they will find that we have done everything, all the necessary preparations for them, including accommodation.
Makwe adds that Juba has yet to receive a list of the members of the SPLM-IO advance team. Meanwhile, President Kiir abruptly suspended a widely publicized planned address to the nation. Mr. Kiir was scheduled to deliver his speech to both the national and international media. After journalists waited for several hours, Atene informed them that Mr. Kiir would address the nation at a later date still to be determined.
The speech of the president to the nation that was expected today has been now postponed until further notice. It's not indefinitely, but until further notice, due to some pressing issues that has came up, which need to be incorporated into the president's speech.
Makwe offered a slightly different explanation for the cancelled speech. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The World Bank and UN groups that track maternal mortality say maternal death rates have fallen by 44% since 1990. While this is significant progress, the authors of the report say too many women still are dying from preventable causes, especially in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN agencies tracking global rates of maternal mortality found that over the past 25 years, the risk of a woman dying from pregnancy-related causes has been cut nearly in half. But a new report on global mortality rates among maternal women suggests very mixed and uneven results. It shows the Millennium Development Goal of reducing maternal deaths by 75% by the end of this year has only been achieved by 9 countries. Only 2 African countries, Cape Verde and Rwanda, are among them. Lale Say is coordinator for reproductive health and research at the World Health Organization. She says maternal deaths worldwide in 1990 stood at 532,000. She says that number dropped to an estimated 303,000 in 2015.
For every 100,000 live births, there will be 216 women around the world who will die during 2015. This would mean that in 2015, around 830 women are dying from pregnancy-related causes every day around the globe.
Say notes that about 99% of all maternal deaths are taking place in developing regions, with sub-Saharan Africa alone accounting for 2 in 3 deaths. While that number is clearly far too high, she says it nonetheless represents a major improvement from the past. She says maternal mortality rates in sub-Saharan Africa have decreased by 45% from 987 to 546 per 100,000 live births between 1990 and 2015. She says Eastern Asia has made the greatest improvement, reducing maternal deaths by 72% over the past 25 years.
We know why mothers die. They die from severe bleeding, from infections, complications from unsafe abortion, and hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. And we also know that most of these deaths are preventable.
UN health officials say improving access to quality health care with trained health workers on hand during and after childbirth can save many lives. They say women and girls must be provided with contraception, safe abortions, and essential medicines to treat problems that may arise. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Farouk Mia's 39th-minute strike ensured Uganda pipped their host Togo by a solitary goal in their second-round Africa 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifier in Lome on Thursday. The Democratic Republic of Congo edged Burundi 3-2 in Bujumbura. Guinea pipped hosts Namibia 1-0 in Windhoek. Benin edged Burkina Faso 2-1 in Cotonou. And Morocco outplayed Equatorial Guinea 2-0 in Agadir. Meanwhile, today, Friday, Madagascar engaged Senegal. Comoro Islands face Ghana. Kenya host Cape Islands as Libya engage Rwanda. Angola face South Africa. Niger host Cameroon. Liberia engage Ivory Coast. Mauritania welcome Tunisia, and Swaziland challenge visitors Nigeria. Tomorrow Saturday, Ethiopia welcome Republic of Congo. Tanzania face Algeria. Botswana engage Mali. Chad play Egypt, and Gabon host Mozambique. On Sunday, Uganda host Togo. Zambia play Sudan. The Democratic Republic of Congo engage Burundi, Equatorial Guinea play Morocco, and Guinea encounter Namibia. In Switzerland, 5 of the 7 candidates were declared eligible to contest the FIFA presidential elections due on the 26th of February next year. FIFA's ad hoc electoral committee disclosed in Zurich on Thursday. They are Jordan's Prince Ali Al Hussein, Bahrain's Sheikh Salman bin Ibrahim Al Khalifa, Frenchman Jerome Champagne, Swiss-born Italian Gianni Infantino, and South African Tokyo Sekwale. Suspended FIFA Vice President Michel Platini and Liberia Football Association President Musa Hassan Bility have the right to appeal their case at the Court of Arbitration in Sports. Finally, the draws for the 2016 African Nations Championships takes place in Cairo, Egypt on Sunday. Teams who qualified to join hosts Rwanda for the contest are Angola, Cameroon, Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Gabon, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Lesotho, Mali, Morocco, Nigeria, Tunisia, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, November 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, exceptional future leaders will gather for this year's World Bank's Youth Summit to tell the story of young people's role in the fight against climate change. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests discussing how youth can inspire communities everywhere to take action. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, husband and wife grooming. Does it matter? Or do you just let yourself go and say, I am married? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing husband and wife grooming. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk. comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.